The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power,
the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I'm prepared to anything I can. Well,
do it then.
Again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
It is Thursday's football show. It is the eve of the new League of Ireland season. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by the former Bohemians goalkeeper Shane Supple. How are you keeping?
All good now.
Are you at a stage now of retirement, as young as you still are, where on the eve of the season you go, you know what, I made the right decision, or is a part of you wishing you'd be out there?
Of course, you'd love to be out there, but I know I made the right decision. The body knows that now. I just can't do it anymore. So, but now I'm looking forward to it now as a spectator and pundit as well. Very much looking forward to it. It's exciting. You know, I think the league, it seems, is going in the right direction, potentially, with everything that's happened over the winter and that. And I know there's a few things to be ironed out, but I think there's a lot of optimism around now at the moment.
It should be a fascinating opening weekend as well. So there's four games tomorrow night. St. Patrick's Athletic against Waterford. Stephen O'Donnell obviously now in charge of Pats. You have Cork against Shelburne, newly promoted Shelburne. Dundalk, who are going to be going for 6th title in 7 seasons, they set out at home against Derry City at Oriel Park. Finn Harps against Sligo. But then the game of the weekend, which should have been the game of tomorrow night, Bohemians against Shamrock Rovers, now kicking off at 2 o'clock on Saturday. You look at the odds, and it's probably a very safe bet when you have Dundalk at evens money and Shamrock Rovers at 6-4. Is there a way you can make a case for any team outside of those two to win the title this season?
No, I can't see it happening, you know. You're looking last year and the way the team's finished, you know, so far behind the likes of Dundalk and Rovers. I can't see them, you know, even in the off-season. You know, Bows have, you know, filled their squad. They've extended their squad. It's a lot, you know, more beefed up. Quality-wise, I wouldn't say it's at the same level as a Rovers or Dundalk. And Derry, likewise, I think. Both clubs very similar in what they're doing, but I can't see anyone getting close to those two.
So Dundalk have obviously been the dominant team and ended up, despite yet another slow start last season, running away with the title. What have Rovers done over the close season that could see them close the gap?
I don't think they've done much in terms of players coming in. I think they've got to know each other a lot better, especially last season. They learned a lot, I think, from last year, obviously being so far ahead at one stage and looking like they could, you know, pull right away and kick on.
Some people said it was over.
Yeah, I wonder who that was, you know, that. But I think they have a lot of continuity in their squad, you know. They know each other. They seem to be building a bit of a team spirit in there that probably we wouldn't have had in the past. And like, there's certain players they can't do without. And if certain players leave, you know, mid-season, that they
Jack Byrne.
Yeah, of course. Jack's the main one, you know. He's had a season in the league now and he'll be stronger, I'd imagine, for that, and Graham Bourke obviously now as well. It'll be interesting to see how those two fit in.
We'll talk about those two then and what maybe we can expect and what Shamrock Rovers need for them if they are to bridge that gap, because Jack Byrne at times last season was unplayable, but not all the time. And there were games, and particularly Shamrock Rovers last season, what cost them ultimately were the games against Bohemians and the games against Dundalk, the two most highly pressurised games. And at times in those matches, he struggled to have the same influence, which is understandable. They're two of the better teams. Is that a part of his game where he needs to improve this season?
Yeah, I think he does. From watching, we did a lot of the Bowes Rovers games last year as well, and you could see that he was, especially in the early stage, he was dropping very, very deep to get on the ball. And I think Mick McCarthy pointed that out as well. If he is to get into the Irish squad, he needs to be playing further up the field. And you know, in the second half of the season, he started to play further forward. But
was that a tactical change from Rovers, or was that just
maybe
him?
Maybe they were listening to Mick. I don't know. But yeah, I think they did. You know, he is more dangerous. He's going to hurt teams more in there, in around that final third. If you can get him on the ball, he's dangerous. But also, Graham Bourke likes to play in that position as well. So it'll be interesting to see how Stephen, you know, accommodates both of them in the team as well, because they're both players who like to see a lot of the ball. And if one is getting on it more than the other, or influence the game more than the other, or getting more game time, I don't know how it's going to pan out. They don't have an out-and-out striker apart from Aaron Green, which is maybe Aaron struggled last year at times and possibly should have finished the season on 20-plus goals, really, with the chances they were creating at times. So that might be an area they haven't really completely sorted out yet.
What would you do then with Bourke?
I think Bourke needs to if you're looking at Burke more as a centre forward striker, maybe, because you can't fit two Thames into a team. Mm. You know, it's impossible. Jack out wide. At times they tried it last year. He's not as influential. He likes to have that kind of free role to do what he wants, but he does need to play further forward, further up the field. So I would say see Graham playing, you know, a lot higher up in maybe a 10-9 kind of a thing with Jack and him playing off each other. Maybe they might look at that to try accommodate them, because I can't see how else they're going
to
do it.
It is a huge win for Rovers to have even kept Jack Byrne. And at the start of the break, just after they'd won the cup final, there was a few weeks where it definitely seemed to be a sense that he might go. Died down over the January transfer window, and I think a lot of speculation is he may go in the mid-season break or next August and move back over. But having him in terms of what Shamrock Rovers are trying to do in terms of bringing crowds to Tala, like, other teams aren't going to make a focal point of one player, but like, this guy can sort of transform what people think of the League of Ireland. Yeah, is that overstating it?
No, definitely. And we need players like that. It's great to have him here. I think he's too good to be here, to be honest. But I know Jack's happy.
Is he though? Like, so I would have gone to Rovers more than any other team last season by a distance and seen a lot of them. And I did just wonder, when you compare him to, say, Richie Towell at his peak, Daryl Horgan when he was at his very best, and like, Dundalk have obviously consistently lost their best player. Like, was he as influential last season as Richie Towell was in his best season for Dundalk?
Probably not, but what is he, 24, is he? He's still very young, like, you know, coming back into the league, getting to know the league. Those lads have come through the league. They were, you know, seasoned in the league. I know Richie came back from Celtic initially, I think it was. But Jack, first season in the league, I think he'll be stronger next year for it. I do think, technically, he is outstanding and he is too good. But there's a lot of other things that come into play. He's happy. He's at home.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know? And you have to take these into consideration as well. And for Jack, if he is to move, it has to be to the right club with the right people around him that are going to know what he needs, you know, perform week in, week out. And it's hard to get that in the UK.
And there's probably signs as well from what you're saying from the first half to the second half of the season and the position he was playing. Mm-hmm. His awareness of where he needs to be and not trying to be all things to all people. And as you say, starting off the season, picking up the ball off the centre halves, where he can do damage. And also Stephen Bradley, obviously understanding how good that Jack Byrne is, but also how he can get the most out of him for everybody around him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, they had a lot of midfielders in particular in that team, and trying to figure out what was the right mix. And I think, as the season went on, the final quarter of the season or third of the season, they really got to know what was their best, you know, team, their best lineup, whether it was the 3-5-2 or, you know, 4-4 or 4-3-3 or whatever it was that they ended up with. But they got to understand each other a lot better. Jack, I think, got to know the players a lot better, which does take time, you know, when you come into a new setup. You know, who's playing week in, week out? Is it going to be Joey O'Brien right back? Is it going to be, you know, Ronan Finn, who's played in the wing-back positions at times? So it does take a bit of time for all that to gel. And I think they have developed that now and that understanding. And they have the belief, I think, going forward. So I think they will push Dundalk this year. And I think Dundalk might be coming the other way a little bit, just purely because the lads have been on the road a long, long time. I think it's difficult to keep that hunger, you know, alive. So it will be interesting to see, but I possibly that they may be on the other side of the slope now this year.
One of the aspects of the league that maybe hasn't changed since last year, you might totally disagree, is about the quality strikers in the league. And that's where I was wondering where Graham Burke maybe fits into that. Like, with the exception of Pat Hooban, it feels as though there is a bit of dearth of talent in terms of real outstanding strikers who you can say are definitely going to score you 20 goals a season. Maybe Danny Mandrew steps up another year. And
I think you're looking at one player who I've played with, I know, who can do that if you keep him fit, is Dinny Corcoran. And he was on the way to doing that last year.
Until he got the bad injury.
And he possibly would have finished his top goal scorer in the league, I think, because Pat Hooban didn't probably have the season. He certainly didn't have the season he had before. Mm. He's a little bit older. His game is a lot different. You know, he does a lot of work off the ball that's probably unseen, where Dinny is probably a little bit cleverer in that sense. You know, he doesn't like to work as hard as well, but he's cute, he's clever, and he uses energy efficiently. But there's not a whole lot out there in terms of strikers. You're looking at McCauley, who's come into to Bowes this year, was at Pat's last year, how he can kick on, hopefully, you know, what Keith can do with him to maybe bring him on potentially, but there's not many around, unfortunately.
Is that the one question mark then about Rovers?
I think, yeah.
Can they get enough goals?
That is, certainly from last year. If you're looking at last year's stats, on the opportunities that they created, that they didn't put them away, and I think if they had a out-and-out goal scorer, I think they can really kick on and challenge, and I think they could win the league next year.
you'd love if there was a proper title duel as well over the latter months of the season, because I know you were at a lot of various events over the off season. There's a nice little bit of niggle between the two sets of players as well, probably heightened by the cup final, the intensity of some of the league clashes, the huge crowds they were getting to Tala. I think it's fair to say, like, they don't really like each other.
No, and you, like, that's what we want in sport, you know, whatever sport it is, and you need to have these rivalries. You know, obviously Rovers and Bowes have it in probably a different sense. They aren't competing at the same end of the table recently. But if Rovers and Dundalk can develop that, what Dundalk and Cork maybe had for a period of time as well.
Yeah.
The numbers that were when Turner's Cross is bouncing down there, it's probably one of the best stadiums in the country. Rovers Stadium is fantastic. It is the best now in the country for facilities and all that. And when that's rocking, like the Rovers Bowes games, but there is a bit of niggle to it now, and I think managers as well are getting involved, and players, and the fans love that.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to see it.
I suspect that if Vinnie Perth was tuned in this evening, he'd be going, this is typical, absolutely typical. Everyone talking about Shamrock Rovers to start the season, despite all that Dundalk did.
I think he'd like it.
Do you?
You know, I think if it's all the pressures on someone else and all the talk, you know, I'd imagine, you know, deep down he'd be happy enough for them to go about their business, you know.
But we aren't maybe acknowledging that, like, Dundalk last season didn't just win the league, it was record-breaking. What they achieved, the amount of goals, the amount of points, like, it was as good a Dundalk as we've seen. So is it just a gut feeling that maybe they've reached the peak and there might be a little step back, or is it more a hope?
I know, I think from watching them last year, I don't know what it was. Yeah, they went down and they achieved what they did, but it didn't have the same feeling to it when Stephen was there, you know, as the manager. And obviously, they had a great run in 2016 in Europe, and they were playing some fantastic football. And I wouldn't say they were blowing teams away with the football they were performing. We did the EA Sports Cup final, and Derry are a team who have caused them troubles down through the years. You know, took a lot of points off them last year as well, and obviously they're playing them on Friday night. But in the EA Sports Cup final, Derry possibly should have won that, you know, in real time. Dundalk got it back in an extra time, and obviously won ultimately in penalties. But that was at a stage of the season that maybe it could have gone one way or the other for Vinnie and Dundalk if they didn't get over that little hump and get a trophy on board. Although they were pushing on in the league and that as well, and obviously losing the FAI Cup final would be a disappointing end to the year. But yeah, they didn't have the same feel as a Dundalk title winning side.
But they know how to get it done.
Yeah. Like,
even in that cup final,
they
lose on penalties, but the game was done and dusted, and they pop up, and they have a way, and they have a knack, and it's innate in them now because they all have so many medals.
Yeah, and no, you can't. It's hard to buy that. That's created over time. You know, those guys playing week in, week out together, and it's hard to create that. The likes of Shields, and obviously Benson's gone now. I think it'll be a big loss to them as well. You got Massey still there. They are getting on, these players, and I don't know if the pitch out there helps at times with that either. But listen, you can't discount them. I'm not, you know, definitely not discounting them. But I fancy Rovers this year.
Right.
And I'm probably not going to be thanked for saying that.
Yeah, I do just wonder at times, like, do people just underestimate what Vinnie Perth has brought? Like, unfortunately, like, the shadow of Stephen Kenny is always going to be there.
Yeah.
But actually, the big questions were asked of him last season, and he answered all of them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if he can do the same again this year, they'll be pushed to the side. You know, I think, and you know, this feeling now that we're talking about will be probably forgotten, and it's Vinnie Perth, Dundalk, you know, rather than maybe it's still seen a little bit as Stephen's handprint on it, you know. And I know Vinnie would ideally like it to be, you know, seen as this is Vinnie's team, you know, and it's his stamp on it. And that's not to say he hasn't put a stamp on it, certainly has, and the players do speak highly of him. But I think another season, another couple of trophies, definitely will do him the world of good.
In terms of the best of the rest and those who can maybe close the gap, so Stephen O'Donnell in at St. Patrick's Athletic and has brought Robbie Benson down, who's been one of the most successful players in the League of Ireland over the last decade. What are you expecting from Pats? Fifth last season?
I am expecting a stronger Pats team, stronger mentally, I think, with Stephen going in there. I think down through the years we would have seen Pats as being a soft touch at times, and I think Stephen's tried to bring in a different culture in there, a stronger mentality within the group. He's cleared out a lot of players. He seems to be giving young lads an opportunity as well. So it'll be interesting to see how it pans out for Stevie this year with Pats, because it is an unknown side, I suppose. Like a lot of teams, like Waterford, Cork as well, they're very much changed teams from what they were last year. So it will be interesting who's going to come out of that pack to maybe, you know, challenge the likes of Bowes and Derry for those other European spots.
So talk to us about Bowes and Derry. Obviously, Bowes getting a lot of very favourable press over the last few days. And actually, it's one of those things, very good for the league as well, with the jersey, their new away jersey, with Refugees Welcome on the front, because Sunday Bohemians are on the 9 o'clock news last night. They're talking about the start of the League of Ireland season, where ordinarily that may not be the case. There's a real good buzz. It's a complete sellout, and you can have the debate about how positive it is that the game against Shamrock Rovers is a sellout, that obviously half the stadium isn't open for the match, and it's the first weekend of the season. It's a game that would sell out no matter when it was played, and you'd love if, like, the amount of people who I've spoken to who would love to have gone to the game. And it's just impossible.
People that have spoken to me looking for tickets.
I know. So
yeah, it's you'd wonder, you'd question it, but why it's the first game of the season, because you know it is a great game. It's a showpiece game, I suppose. It's the biggest rivalry in League of Ireland football, but yeah, you'd like it later on in the season, maybe, especially because it's hard coming in from pre-season. Teams, they don't really know a whole lot about themselves, I suppose, coming into pre-season. I always found that it took me 3-4 games to kind of get the eye in, because you're playing weaker sides in pre-season, basically. You're playing first division teams, so it is difficult, but it's going to be a great game, and the atmosphere is going to be bouncing down there.
I'd imagine as well, it's definitely not the sort of game that Stephen Bradley would have wanted first.
Possibly not. But if you get a win, it gives you a massive momentum going forward in the season. You know, whichever team comes out on top there, the confidence that'll give, you know, that team going forward. And Bowes side, or, you know, Stephen Bradley's team challenging for the title. If they can get the win on Saturday, you know, it's a massive momentum going forward.
They obviously showed some real promise at times last season, and the games that stood out were some of the games against Shamrock Rovers, which, again, like, maybe the atmosphere adds to that, and the passion that was in the side, and they frustrated the life out of Rovers and equipped themselves really well. What's a good season for Bohemians?
If they can emulate what they did last year, that's a brilliant season. I don't think they can do any more, to be honest, with the resources they have. There's just, it's near impossible. You know, they had a fantastic start to the season. They were keeping clean sheets, winning games. There was, you know, confidence high. But the fixture list, I think, it then impacted, and it's going to impact those teams that are below Rovers and Dundalk again this season, the way it's been, you know, stockpiled for the first half of the season. It's madness. And even last year, or into the second half of the season, you know, I know my final season there, we had only a game every week, and the difference that made, we went on a fantastic run, and it did make a massive difference, because everything got recovery properly, and, you know, lads are still working and all that as well, so it does help. But the fixture list doesn't help the rest of the league. It certainly doesn't, you know, although some other teams are full time. But I don't think they have the strength and depth as a Dundalk or Rovers to cope with it.
So down the other end of the league then, and it can flip so quickly in terms of the League of Ireland, where Waterford were a real promising side for the last couple of years, and resources lacking now. Cork City, obviously such a dominant force, and been a real struggle despite, it seems, a bit of investment coming from Preston, and whether that's a positive thing or not, considering it seems as though they're giving up possibly future deals involving Alan Brown, who you watched for Preston scoring last night, and you think he's worth 5 million now. Absolutely, without question. Who are the teams that are going to be struggling?
I like Finn Harps, you know, obviously Ollie will admit that himself, he's an honest man, you know, they'll be down there. I think Cork and Waterford will be down there, to be honest. I think Shell's be okay, purely because of their geographic location, I think, and the players that they have. They've brought in, Ian's brought in some decent players this year, so I think they'll be able to cope as well. But I think between Finn Harps, Cork and Waterford will be the teams fighting it out down the bottom, I think.
Yeah, not huge benefit to the league in terms of, you're talking about the regional sides there.
No, definitely not. And like, Waterford, obviously a massive football in town as well. They've done great over the last number of years, although slipped off last year a bit after their fantastic season back in the league. And Cork again, like, just it's a funny situation down there. You know what's happened to them, how quickly they've fallen. And like, one of the best grounds to play in, best atmospheres to be a part of, and it's unfortunate, you know, for them that they are struggling again, you know, to keep the team up where it should be, really, you know, a massive population down there as well, love their football, and it's great when the Cork are challenging, they are great for the league as well, so I hope that they can get back to where they were, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago.
I'm not fully up on the internal Dublin politics of League of Ireland football, but which is the greater rivalry for Bowes? Is it Rovers or Shells?
It's Rovers, from what I can believe, or led to believe. But now, obviously, Shells back in the league after being away for so long. That could, you know, re-emerge as well again. And there's a lot of ex-players there in Shells, ex-managers. So it'll be a tasty enough one as well, I think, because I think both clubs are kind of similar in the way they model themselves as well, and what they're trying to do in the communities.
Ian Morris, obviously very young to be in as a head coach at a club, and former Bowes man, and probably a bit of a shock when he took that leap across to Shelburne. Like you say, the geographical location, the fact that they're in Dublin means they can attract more players. Course, and there was a bit of pressure on them though last season as well, even though they had a pretty star-studded squad.
Yeah, with everyone had this impression that they were spending a massive amount of money, which wasn't the case, and that heaped more pressure on Shells and Ian to get promoted. And it was, you know, touch and go at, you know, towards the end. If it had kept going, you're not sure, but they gave themselves enough of a lead, I think, to see it out. And, you know, it's great for Shells, obviously. Massive club, massive history. It's great for Ian. It's his first proper gig in, you know, in football as a manager. And I hope he does well. I think he's great. You could always see with him when he was playing that there was a manager in there. And he'd do well, you know. I'd no doubt about that. And
what was it about him?
It's just his way about him, you know, the way he speaks to people, the way he communicates. You know, he knows the game so well. You know, he played in so many different positions for Bowes over his 3 years with them. He'd slot in anywhere and do a job, and there'd be no hassle with him. And he was the person that players would look to lead. And things weren't going right in training, he'd step up and he'd lead along with the likes of Derek Pender. You know, so. He always had that about him, and you know he's a very organised guy as well. You know, behind the scenes, he has everything in place. He knows what he wants to do and wants to achieve, and I no doubt he'll go on to be, you know, a great manager in the league and maybe further afield in time.
All right, we need to take a very quick break. Your prediction, though, is Shamrock Rovers for the title.
Yes.
You don't seem fully convinced there.
Well, I'm not convinced. Not that I'm not convinced. I'm saying it because I'm a Bowes player. A former Bowes player.
You got to take that into account at times as well. Quick break, and then we're going to talk goalkeeping.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
You're welcome back. It's Thursday's football show. Nathan in studio. I'm joined by Shane Supple as well. Just to let you know that this coming Monday, that is February 17th, we're going to be live from the Alex Hotel in Dublin. We're going to be previewing the Champions League second round fixtures along with some of the best minds in football. On the night, we'll be talking to Brian Kerr, Damian Delaney, Keith Andrews and European Cup winning legend Graeme Souness. We'll all be there on the night. If you want to get there, just go to offtheball.com/events. And remember, this is an over 18s event. On the night, Shane, we're going to be talking about the best Champions League side of the last decade. And we will have no goalkeeping expertise, even though I'm sure Brian Kerr will give his opinion on this. But we'll have no actual goalkeeping expertise there on the night. So our shortlist on the night for a goalkeeper for the best of the last 10 years is Manuel Neuer of Bayern Munich, who I think obviously fully deserving of his place, Champions League winner back in 2013. Keylor Navas, Real Madrid, three-time Champions League winner. And Gianluigi Buffon, all-round legend, getting to finals but never actually won it. Who, over the last 10 years, was the best of those three?
Neuer of those three, without a doubt.
What do you mean of those three? You sound like you want to propose somebody else.
I wouldn't have Navas in there. So I know you're saying he's won medals. But
he's what else matters?
No, it does matter. Medals are not the be-all and end-all. I don't rate Navas, but I don't rate him as highly as some of the other keepers. I don't know why Alisson's not in there.
It was touch and go. Why? It was touch and go. Obviously, Alisson's played the final last year, but he's only played one Champions League final. It's over a decade. Maybe a bit of recency bias there.
Yeah, possibly, but it's only on Champions League finals you're basing these.
Well, the entire Champions League campaigns.
Yeah, well, he had a good couple of good campaigns at Roma, no? I'd like to stick him in there.
You want to put Alisson? We might have to change that now. Damn it. A long way to go until Monday. So what was it about Navas that maybe you weren't fully... considering he was first choice for...
Yeah, he was, yeah.
You know, he took over from Iker Casillas.
Yeah, obviously he moved on. But I think he's got too many ricks in him. To be honest, I think he had a great World Cup at the time, and obviously Real signed him off the back of that World Cup. But yeah, I don't think on a consistent basis he's anywhere near the likes of Alisson or Neuer or Buffon, for that fact. Obviously Buffon was coming to the end of his career and unfortunately never won a Champions League, and if any man deserved it, it was him. But I just think Alisson is, you know, head and shoulders above most at the moment, how consistent he is, and it's nothing spectacular with him. He keeps the game very simple, you know, in my opinion, and that's what kind of goalie I'd like in my side, or to be playing behind me. So for me, it has to be him.
When you look at what Alisson is doing, and you look at Alisson and Ederson and what's expected from them in terms of when the ball is at their feet, has what's expected from a goalkeeper transformed completely from when you were starting out?
Yeah, definitely. From when I was starting out, absolutely. Yeah, 100% it has. Obviously, it was important to be able to be comfortable with your feet and the ball at your feet. But
was it something when you were a kid you would have spent much time on?
Not really in terms of playing out from the back, really, a whole lot. The way teams are playing out now, yeah, it would be given to the fullback, and the fullback might ping it down the line. I know in the time in Ipswich, that's how we would have played it. We would have pushed up and got the fullback to drop, get him on it, and then he just turned teams. But it wouldn't be come back to the keeper, play out the other side, you know, ping one into the winger. Not at all, but it has evolved massively, and you know, it's a big part of the game now. Maybe it's taken away a little bit from other sides of the game for keepers as well. They maybe aren't as focused on the basics, and the job in hand is obviously keeping the ball out of net. But yeah, you need to be an all-rounder now, and you know, shot stopper, and everyone says he's a good shot stopper, that has to be a given nowadays. You know, if you're not able to keep the ball out of net, then there's something wrong.
So would you have been aware over the latter years of your career that there was this change happening, and there was a, like, as new managers come in, they might expect a little bit more from you, that a manager might come in and want to transform things completely, as almost every manager, even in the Championship now, seems to want to do, to play out from the back?
Oh, no, absolutely, and we saw that with Man City at the time. You know, Guardiola obviously got rid of Joe Hart and brought in Bravo for that reason alone, because he didn't think Joe was comfortable enough with his feet and was able to play the game that he wanted to play. I had my own goalkeeping academy, and that's the way we were adapting our coaching, you know, to fit the modern goalkeeper. So a lot of our work would have been with the lads, the ball at their feet, because we knew that's what international managers are looking for here.
And would it change the way you were looking for players for an academy, the skill set?
Oh yeah, yeah. There'd be certain, you know, I'd be aware obviously from playing over there, and that certain teams in the UK would look for, and certain coaches over there might, you know, ask me, have you got anyone that's able to play out from the back, and you know, or other clubs be looking for someone that's 6'2", 6'3", and they can work on it if they get them early enough, but you know, their prime objective was to get a keeper that was a big unit, basically. And then others were, you know, open to someone a little bit smaller who was very comfortable with the ball at their feet. But obviously the basics still come into it. You need to be able to, you know, catch the ball and keep it out of net as well. But
do you see now when, if you're looking at, say, younger kids who are just starting out and starting to more specialise into that position, if they're 11, 12, or even at that National League at under 13 level, is the skill set, is it very much based around what they can do with the ball at their feet?
Yeah, I think that's where, you know, the mantra now for coaches and any coaches that have done their badges in recent years, I think that is the way they've been taught, you know. And
is there a different coaching setup for goalkeeping?
Different badges. Different badges, yeah. I've done my B license, B goalkeeping license. So you have to go on and do your B outfield before you can go on and do your A goalkeeping license.
Okay.
So yeah, there are different badges. It is just up to the A though, as far as I'm aware.
Right.
For goalkeepers. But Alan Kelly would look after that, this side of the water, on the badges front. So it is.
So after you do your B goalkeeping license, you have to do the B outfield.
Yeah.
Right. And is that because of the change in?
Yeah, I think they, you know, because goalkeeping coaches now have a big input as well in the team, maybe they're even assistant coaches at times as well to the outfield players. So they have to be able to understand the game and know the game as well to coach the keeper in different positions, you know, and how deep a team is playing, how high the goalkeeper needs to be maybe as well in relation to that. So it's important to understand the game. I wouldn't be big on maybe some of the pathways in there for goalkeepers and that, that you have to do it, but
in what way?
Especially lads that have played the game. I think, you know, if you've played the game at a decent level, I think you understand it. You know, you'd have to have played such a high level. So then it isn't necessary for them to be put through, you know, a B outfield badge to go on and get their A. I'm not so sure. I think, you know, they'd be well capable of stepping straight up to the A goalkeeping license, you know, because a lot of it is a mental thing. It's understanding what a goalkeeper's going through, because you're isolated there a lot of the time. And there's a lot of free time with your thoughts there, which can be dangerous. And for a coach to be able to work with a keeper on that at that level, not just put on sessions and facilitate sessions, to be able to speak to him and, you know, if things are going wrong, is he mentally, you know, do we need to adapt this session because I can see in him he's not at the races today, or there's something affecting him, he's had a bad performance on the Friday night, whatever it may be. So that's an important side of it as well, which you can only get really from playing the game a lot of the time, you know.
Do you ever get to the stage where you're accepting of making mistakes?
No, I don't think so. Well, I suppose you have to.
Or that mistakes happen.
Yeah, I think you have to. Like, mistakes happen, and that's the way you know you have to approach it. It's going to happen. You don't intend to make them, and a lot of keepers will struggle with that, especially in the younger stages of their career. And if you can't cope with it and deal with it and get through that, those keepers won't make it to a high level, because they are going to happen. It's just human nature. You're going to make mistakes for whatever reason. Mm. But obviously, the fewer you make, you know, it's you know, for the better, obviously, and you know, the higher you'll move up the chain.
How important is the right coach then for that mental side, particularly for younger players who are trying to
it's so important.
You're not being hung out to dry.
Yeah, well, I've seen coaches down through the years destroy keepers, you know, and particularly in the UK when you go over there, and the times I was over there were certain coaches I came across and I thought, you know, it's the old school mentality, you know, that, you know, you better toughen up, lad, here.
A good bollock and will sort them out.
This is a man's game now, like, but it did destroy certain keepers, you know, and some were lucky to get through it at times. I can think of a couple now as I'm speaking, but others weren't as lucky. And they didn't progress in their careers and probably always carried that with them and felt they were never good enough because of the approach of some goalkeeping coaches towards them as well. So it's very important. And I think that's changed that mantra, you know, as well, that old school, grow up, you're a man, it's a man's game now. It's a lot different. And I'm not saying it's mollycoddling anyone, but it's an understanding of what's needed.
Because it's rare enough now that a manager, well, that any manager would criticise any player, but particularly criticise a goalkeeper for a mistake. But there was a situation earlier this season when Dean Henderson made the mistake for Sheffield United against Liverpool when he let Wijnaldum's shot slip through his legs. Chris Wilder absolutely nailed him after the game. That obviously he's on loan from Manchester United, he was getting a bit too big for his boots, people are talking about England caps and all this, that he needs to get back to basics. It just felt like such a risky move at the time, but maybe it's just good management, he realises that the player can take it.
I think from seeing his interviews down through the season and that, and what he's about and how he speaks, I think he would have assessed the situation and known he can do that, he can give him that bollock, and from maybe his reaction in the dressing room afterwards or whatever it was. But yeah, someone will go off just off the cuff, hot-headed, and deliver a bollocking like that when it's not ideal, and it won't have the impact or effect that they're looking for, maybe. But he obviously knew it would have the impact that he wanted.
That time to yourself with your thoughts, is it quite what it was, I wonder, when with the way it has developed as well, that you're talking about that gap, the awareness of the gap, say, between the centre-backs and where you should be in your area. Like, maybe Alisson is one of the best at that, of knowing exactly where to stand and when to make that run, and confident enough, obviously, in his own ability to win a header or do that. Like, is that something that's changed as well, that level of sort of, you can't switch off, you have to actually always...
Yeah, but
I think you're almost a sweeper.
Yeah, you are. There's some that maybe don't like that side of it, but I think with that, it's very difficult to teach that. It's more an intuition or a real reading of a game, of a situation that's developing. And, you know, you're watching a player or you've seen a player over time and you kind of know his movements by the shape of his body, by someone coming out of the corner of your eye, and you're anticipating. So it's very difficult to give that to a keeper. I think a lot of them, it's in them. It's just a feeling, intuition, and, you know, and to want to take on that responsibility and put yourself into those situations as well is a tricky one. Lloris is obviously one down through the years that has, and you know, they feel the risk far outweighs, you know, the reward, or the reward far outweighs the risk of it.
And what do you do with a young keeper then, who maybe you look at and think doesn't quite have that game knowledge? Is there another path you can go down? Do you just say that's you can work in another skill set?
You have to adapt, you know, a session or, you know, your approach to them. But again, you know, the bollocking method is not going to work there, or constantly hammering or exposing him to those situations where he's not comfortable. And it's a gradual maybe thing you have to develop and get his confidence up to, you know, put him in situations where he is winning, basically. And maybe in time he'll have the confidence then, and to see that being in this position is going to help you in the long run, rather than being, you know, 2 yards further back where you feel a bit safer.
Yeah.
But actually, if you're up there, you're questioning the person in position, you're, you know, filling your defenders with more confidence because they know you're there on the front foot ready to come out. So, yeah, you have to manage it, you know, well. And it's a coach that understands that and that approach.
What have you made of David De Gea then over the last couple of years and some of the mistakes that he's been making? Because, like, you talk about shot stoppers. For nearly a decade, the very best shot stopper there is, but suddenly Alisson and Ederson come around and they can make the saves, but they can also do a whole lot more. Has that played into some of his issues? That
maybe just that, maybe just the contract situation as well has played into it. But like some of the mistakes he's made are just, you know, they're not even schoolboy mistakes. You can't fathom them sometimes. It has to be concentration really with him. I don't know, or obviously a lack of confidence, and he's compounding that by making mistakes week on week now. It seems, but. It's for a keeper of his quality and his stature and what he's achieved over the years.
Yeah.
You know, usually as you get older and, you know, more experienced, the mistakes become less and less, but they seems to be going the other way at times with him. And it's confidence, or there's something distracting him at the moment, whether it's the contract situation, he doesn't want to be there now, or whatever it may be, I don't know.
Would you have found you were more prone to making mistakes if you just mentally things weren't right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. For certain people, I think football was always great for me in that sense that I'd always forget about everything once I went out on the pitch. But
right.
As a younger keeper, I think, yeah, you're not quite as assured of yourself as you are when you're older and more experienced in that. So the game was a lot easier for me when I got into my late 20s. There's no doubt about it, you know.
So going through the various parts then, as a pure out-and-out shot stopper, who's the player you'd look at right now as the pick of the bunch in world football?
I'm going to go for either Alisson or Ederson, I think.
As a shot stopper?
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to go to them, Alisson for most. I think
right. Everything.
He has it. I did like Pickford. I think Pickford is distracting himself an awful lot these days with his carry-on after he makes saves and that.
Right.
The whooping and hollering, it's just not for me.
Almost for himself, just trying to instill some confidence in that self-importance?
Possibly, but I don't think it's helping him. I don't think it's helping people around, players around them either at times. But it's maybe just my preference. It wouldn't be for that. But Alisson definitely...
Very aggressive, Alisson. Like, no matter what, when he comes out for saves, for those point-blank saves, like, he never seems like he's afraid to clatter the player as well.
Yeah, right. Again, that's something you're always told. You know, if you make a decision, you stick to it and just go with it and, you know, bear the consequences then at the end. But he does seem to have that mentality that he's not afraid of anything or getting a smack anywhere on the body. So, definitely Alisson, for me, would be the shot stopper. But again, you know, everyone should be a good shot stopper, but some are better than others. And I think that's down to intuition and reading a player as well. You can nearly be on your way to making a save before the ball is even struck, I think, at times.
All these skills then, like shot stopping, like, are these things you can learn? Like, can you, if you were to see 14, 15-year-old keepers who are very good in certain areas but weaker, like, do you think, I can turn them into a very good keeper? Or do you actually feel it's a position that you just sort of have it or you don't?
I think it is, like, the mental side of the goalkeeping is the biggest part of it, I think. If you have I think you can do a lot with a strong mentality in terms of technically.
Right.
You can get them up to a certain level. I've seen players that are not as technically gifted as others, but they have that mental toughness and that'll get them through or get them to a level. If a keeper is lacking in, you know, coming and taking crosses, say, for instance, it's difficult. It's very difficult because it's two things, probably confidence as well as possibly technique. And that is goalkeeping. If you don't have, and they say that's everything in football, it's confidence, but definitely in goalkeeping. If you don't have the confidence in your ability to go and put yourself in positions where you're going to be exposed or be vulnerable at times, you're not going to make it to to a high level in the game. And we have a good few keepers coming through, we hope, at the moment.
Yeah, I was going to ask him that just from an Irish point of view, because it seems as though we've probably never had a bigger gap between number one and number two, and that there's Darren Randolph way out there, and no reason why he couldn't be around for another 4 or 5 years. But below that, we have a lot of young goalkeepers who get little bits of first team football. They're at big clubs, like Quevin Kelleher there, obviously. Gavin Mizuna's gone to Manchester City, but like, it seems like they're still quite a distance away from making that step up.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you've seen of them because, again, they're not playing much first-team football. Like, how would you rate them in terms of who's the most likely to next in line?
I've seen a good bit of Queeveen with the 21s. And I've seen a good bit of Mark Travers, probably more so in his younger years. And I always liked Mark. I always liked what he was about. He's a calmness about him as well. He does have a presence there. He's a big lad. Technically excellent as well. He's the one for me that I would hope that I fancy to come through as well. He's getting a bit of opportunities there. Maybe injuries have curtailed it a bit, but Quivey needs to get out and play at this stage now. There's no point being at a big club when you're 22, 23. You need to get out and play games. And Gavin's obviously only gone over in the last year or so, so he's a younger guy, but you know it's fairly unlikely he's going to come through at Man City, but hopefully he'll get a good education and the opportunity to move on somewhere, out alone initially maybe, and then you know somewhere more permanent. But you're hoping some of these guys can get some more regular football in the next year or so, because as you said, if something was to happen to Darren, we're struggling, you know, and he's not playing obviously at the moment, so that's another part of it.
Shane, thanks a lot for coming in. You'll be at Daily Mountain Saturday.
Absolutely.
Enjoy.
Thanks.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.